should require assistance during the call, please press star followed by the zero. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded, and I would now like to turn the conference over to our first speaker, Ms. Stacey Osborne. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Welcome to today's press call to discuss the MCA Division I Committee on Infractions decision regarding Georgia Southern University. As members of the media, you should have received a link to both the press release and the public decision, which contains the details of this case. This information can also be found in the Media Center at ncaa.org. The Committee on Infractions is an independent group comprised of representatives across MCA membership and public. The members of the Committee on Infractions who reviewed this case include Michael F. Adams, Chancellor of Pepperdine University, Jill Pilgrim, attorney in private practice, David Roberts, Vice President for Athletics Compliance at the University of Southern California, Greg Sankey, Chief Hearing Officer, Chair of the Committee on Infractions, and Commissioner of Southeastern Conference, and Sean Carr, Soriano Ryan, University Counsel, Princeton University. Greg Sankey will now discuss the findings and decisions of the Infractions Committee, and following his opening comments, he will take questions.
Thank you, Stacey, and good afternoon to everyone. The Committee on Infractions decision in this matter details the findings and penalties that relate to this case. Our comments today are designed to address your questions. I would remind you that the report that I know you've received in a relatively short time frame does stand on its own merits and contains the answers to many of the questions you may have. The violations in this case centered on two former Georgia Southern University staff members who violated NCAA ethical conduct rules when they provided three football student athletes with impermissible academic assistance. In the first instance, a former assistant compliance director provided a student athlete with a flash drive containing her previous work for a course in which the student athlete was eventually enrolled. The student athlete later pulled an assignment from that flash drive and submitted that assignment taken from the flash drive as his own work. When the professor at the university, relatively short order, discovered the work, the student athlete and the former assistant compliance director worked together to draft responses that stated the student athlete was solely accountable for that work. However, during the interview process, after initially denying the involvement of the former assistant compliance director, the student athlete stated that, in fact, the staff member had provided him with a flash drive and had instructed him to tell a false story. The former assistant director not only violated the NCAA's ethical conduct rules when she provided the student athlete with impermissible academic assistance and influenced him to provide false and misleading information, but also failed to cooperate with the NCAA enforcement staff's investigation. In the second instance, a different individual, a former assistant director of student athlete services, also violated the NCAA's ethical conduct rules when she drafted and submitted 10 extra credit assignments on behalf of two football student athletes. She obtained the student athlete's login and passwords and submitted those assignments without the student athlete's knowledge. The hearing panel prescribed the following penalties and corrective measures for this case. 2 years of probation for the university, which will extend from the date of this announcement, July 7, 2016, to July 6, 2018. There are 3-year show cause orders for the former assistant compliance director and the former assistant director of student athlete services that extend from July 7th 2016 to July 6, 2019. During that time, an NCAA school employing either individual must appear with the individual before a Committee on Infractions panel. There is a vacation of records required in which the student athletes participated while ineligible. After the release of the public report, the university will identify the competitions that have been affected by this vacation. Next, reduction of two scholarships for the football program during the 2016-17 year. If the university has already extended the scholarship agreements to prospects for the 16-17 year, the university may serve the reduction during 2017-18. There is a reduction applied in the number of official visits for the football program during the upcoming, the 2016-17 year, by 10% from the university's four-year average of those visits. Also, a reduction of fall 2016 football evaluations by 10% from the university's four-year average for using those evaluations, and then a $5,000 fine plus an additional amount equal to 1% of the football program's operating budget. This was self-imposed by the university. This concludes my opening remarks.
Thank you. Operator, can you please explain to reporters how they may ask a question?
Of course. And ladies and gentlemen, if there are any questions from the phone lines at this time, please press star followed by the one on your touch-tone phone. You'll hear a tone indicating you've been placed in queue, and all questions will be pulled in the order they are received. Once again, if there are any questions from the phone lines at this time, please press star followed by the one. We do have a question for the line of Dal Kennedy with WTOC-TV. Please go ahead.
Yes, one question would be if the players in question will be identified or simply the time with which they were there and any games in which they participated?
We do not identify in the public infractions reports the names of the involved student-athletes, so that won't come from the Committee on Infractions.
Okay.
Thank you. Next question.
We do have a question for the line of Doug Roberson with Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Please go ahead.
Yes, can you say what years these infractions occurred?
I'm sorry, Doug, you kind of broke up there. Ask me that again.
In what years did these infractions occur?
Sure. I'll point folks to the actual infractions report itself on page one. First sentence of the third paragraph says the first academic violation occurred in the fall of 2013. Go to the next paragraph right below. The second academic violation occurred 1 year later in the fall of 2014.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And we do have a question for the line of George Henry with the Associated Press. Please go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon. I don't have the report in front of me. No reflection. There's no penalties for the head coach or any assistant coaches. It's just these two representatives that work with student-athletes.
George, that's correct. The only two individuals subject to penalties imposed by the Committee on Infractions are the two involved university staff members, no member of the coaching staff.
And we do have a question from the line of Nathan Dean with the Savannah Morning News.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to clarify on the probation that is specifically for the football team, correct? Because it just says university on the probation.
It is a university probation.
Okay, so that affects all the sports?
Well, it applies to the university as it relates to its status as an NCAA member. That is a standard application. Obviously, these violations involve members of the football team. There are additional sport-specific penalties, but it relates to the university being placed on probation by the NCAA Committee on Infractions.
And does that include any postseason bans at all?
There are no postseason bans applied to this matter.
Okay, thank you.
We do have a question from the line of Haston Willis from SB Nation. Please go ahead.
What is the timeline for when we will know what games and or records may be vacated? Now that's going to be later today, but do we know when?
I don't have a specific identifier for the time. The universities have a period of time in which to consider whether or not to appeal actions of the Committee on Infractions, and so they have that window. There's also and just a reasonable kind of due diligence work on their part. In my experience, universities are typically able to respond in a reasonable time frame, but I won't put a number on that.
Okay, so there's basically an appeals process that will happen prior to that, it sounds like?
Well, there's a window, which by memory is up to 15 days, and then if there's no appeal, the matter's done. But the effort to evaluate the vacation piece could be done simultaneously.
Okay, thank you.
Operator, do we have any further questions?
We do have a question for the line of Jake New with Inside Higher Ed. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi, thanks. In the last couple of years, we've had fraud or something like it at UNC, Southern Methodist, Syracuse, Southern Mississippi, Louisiana, Lafayette. Last year, John Duncan said the association was investigating 20 colleges for academic fraud. So I was wondering if you could comment on whether you think this is a major problem and maybe if there's something that needs to be done to address this type of fraud more thoroughly somehow.
Well, I will tie my comments here to the work of the Committee on Infractions. Every one of these matters is troubling and viewed seriously. In fact, if you turn, for those interested, to page 9 of the report, I'll not comment on issues that have not been decided by the Committee on Infractions, but there is a recitation of the committee's recent evaluation under NCAA bylaw 10-1B or C in three matters. And whether one quantified the number of cases as simply the three listed plus the one today, or identified others, I think on behalf of the Committee on Infractions, every one of those is troubling, particularly so when, if you will, the adults are involved in the misbehavior. We have high expectations. I think those are noted within this report and in the others, and the people who are in leadership roles need to fulfill those obligations. That's the clear message from the Committee on Infractions on these matters.
Thanks. And if there are any additional questions at this time, please press star followed by the one on your touch-tone phone. And at this time, it does appear there are... We do have a follow-up question from the line of Dal Kennedy with WTOC-TV. Please go ahead.
One question to sort of differentiate the 2013 infraction. It stated that the student-athlete had knowledge of this. The 2014, it mentions that there's no belief that the student-athletes had knowledge of what was going on. Does that factor in differently of how that particular case is handled, or with regard to the student athletes, or is it looked at more from the staff members?
I think the summary, if you look through here, is the staff members' behavior is a determining factor. In the first matter, the student athlete eventually disclosed what had occurred. Obviously, we have referenced requirements about vacating because of impermissible benefits. The matter could have been even worse had some acknowledgments not been made. I'll also note, if you have an opportunity to read the report, in the first matter, there is a narrative that explains, I think within 4 days, the student-athlete's professor identified concerns about potentially the assignment that had been submitted, having been copied from an earlier course, again, in relatively short order. That professor communicated with the head football coach, who went immediately to the athletics director, student services director, which I would identify from the expectation of how things ought to work on campus when these problems occur is appropriate. If you look through the second matter, in a similar way, there's relatively quick response on the university's behalf, and I think those speak on the other side, too, that there are people here that did act appropriately, even though there was the misbehavior, the misconduct that occurred.
Okay, thank you.
And once again, if there are any additional questions at this time, please press star followed by the one on your touchtone phone. And we do have a follow-up question for the line of Haston Willis with SB Nation. Please go ahead.
Yeah, what is the timeline? When did this investigation actually begin? From what I understand, there's really no public knowledge that the investigation was even happening, so I was wondering when this actually started, when the investigation started.
Let's go right to the case history. The first line talks about September 16th, when the professor notified the head football coach. We also provide in here the flow of the notice of allegations. I think you go back to August 3rd of 2015, so August 3rd of last year, the enforcement staff provided the parties with a draft notice of allegations. That's towards the bottom of page 2. So that would begin really an active investigation that would lead to today. There was a summary disposition effort and then some additional work requested by the hearing panel of the Committee on Infractions. But to point to a direct date on when I would identify activity beginning, the first would be that September 16th date, which was on campus. The notice of allegations from the enforcement staff being August 3rd of 2015 is likely the date of which you have the most interest.
Okay, thank you.
And at this point, there are no further questions from the phone lines. Please continue.
Thank you again for joining us today. This concludes our comments. A recording of the teleconference will be available in the near future at nca.org.
And ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude your conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using the AT&T Executive Teleconference Service.